Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me is Matt Smith. In the ninth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, I will ask Matt his thoughts on the last match for Fulham, which was a 2-2 draw at the Valley against Charlton Athletic. This is a disappointing result, and I will ask Matt his thoughts and try to figure out what happened on Sunday. But before we get started, I have to welcome back my friend to the ninth edition, yes, ninth edition of this show. Matt, welcome back to the Coaching Corner.
Hey, Russ, good to be back, and kind of a sour note going into the international break, but we'll try to make sense of it and kind of see where we go from here.
Yeah, listen, this is, again, I can't stress this enough, Matt, and I think you'll back me on this. This is a lost opportunity. This is a chance to go into the international break with some momentum. Instead, you have questions, and again, we're going to go through it because there's been a theme through some of these matches this season, and that's giving up late goals and many of them on headers. So maybe you could help me figure out exactly what's going on here, who's to blame, and how we can fix these problems. Because, again, Fulham really should have gotten all 3 points, Matt. I'll just start there on my thoughts. You know, again, that's what's disappointing about this. I thought I'd be over this match by now. Again, it was on Sunday, and we're Wednesday when we're recording this, and I'm still angry. But just let's start here. Just give me an overall view of what you saw in this 2-2 draw for Fulham against Charlton Athletic.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we saw kind of more of the same, just a very inconsistent match. And as good as we were to get the 2-0 lead, is equally as kind of, you know, how much let down we were by giving up that 2-goal lead late in the game. And, I think there's definitely certain reasons to that, and we'll get into that later. But, you know, there's always – there's times when it's a point gained and there's times when it's two points lost. And this is definitely 2 points lost. I know that, you know, I've seen a lot of people say that, you know, going into the match, we would have taken a draw and, you know, probably been okay with that. But, you know, really, you've got to kind of change your expectations as the match goes along. And as we saw as the match went along, you very quickly have to change from, yeah, I'll take a point to, no, we should have 3 points. And, it's very, very frustrating, and I think that, something has to kind of change here, and it's either the reaction to the manager or, you know, maybe, unfortunately, the manager himself.
Very good take to start the show here, Matt, because, again, I'm just trying to make heads or tails of this. And the one thing, before we break down the positions and all the players, I want to ask you about this, because this is something that drives me crazy. And again, Fulham certainly had many opportunities to score that third goal, but this is really an indication of when you have 2 goals, you have to get that third, Matt, because this is what can happen if you don't finish off a team.
Yeah, no, you have to be able to really put your foot on the throat of a team and end the game. We definitely had opportunities to do that and weren't able to do it. Unfortunately, to Charlton's credit, I mean, they just kept playing and kind of hit us in our underbelly with corners and crosses and we're able to kind of sneak away in kind of a smash and grab job, even though it is at home for them, smash and grab job to get to leave with a point.
Let me ask you again, before we move on and really, really get into the nuts and bolts of this, did you feel at 2-0 that Fulham were cruising? Again, Kit said it. I felt that way. Many fans felt that at some point, I want to say in the middle of the second half, it almost felt like Charlton, you know, it's not that they weren't trying, it's just that they looked like a beaten club. They actually at one point looked like a beaten club to me, Matt. Watching the match, I'm thinking they need to get that third goal to put this team away. Did you feel like that watching it?
I did until we made some of our substitutions and kind of made a statement of how we were going to finish the game. I think that kind of almost gave them a lift in a way that, hey, you know, they're going to drop back and let us come on and pressure them. And, so let's kind of go at it and just see what happens. And so that's kind of unfortunate. But, yeah, leading up to that point, it looked like they were just content with not giving up a third, to be honest. And, you know, but then things changed and their mentality basically, you know, switched and they turned to 180 and they started to come at us and put pressure on us. And, you know, they made a great substitution as well, obviously, because, you know, his first touch was a goal. You know, and that really kind of sparked him. And it's kind of the old thing that I've said before on this show is as a 2-0 lead is the worst lead in soccer. It's the most dangerous one. You know, they scored a goal, and I'm sure some of our players and maybe even Kit was saying, hey, we're still okay. We're still in the lead. It's still 2-1. But at the same time, their player, the club captain came on, you know, scored a goal with his first touch and just created an instant spark. And then all of a sudden, you know, now we're under the caution. So it's, you know, it's kind of tough to bounce back from that. So that's kind of why I always say that 2-0 is one of the most dangerous leads.
I couldn't agree more. You know, again, I certainly didn't feel comfortable. And Matt, we talked about in the QPR match, I didn't feel comfortable at 3-0. I'm here to tell you, you know, I want Fulham to be ruthless, to put a team away. And they tried, but again, what's interesting is that you brought up the substitutions. We will go through those in coaching situations because that's something that I've heard many fans talk about and question the coaching. The coaching, I guess you could say, situations, meaning the substitutions. We'll definitely get into that because I want to get your thoughts. We'll go through each one of them. Sounds like, based on how you began, that you feel one way on that. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's break down the team first. Let's start in that. Let's talk about the play of Andy Lonergan in this match. How did he fare?
I mean, I thought he played okay. I definitely don't think he was at fault for either one of the goals. Both were from point blank range and you know, pretty good headers, and so I'm not sure you can necessarily fault him for either one of the two goals, except, you know, would you like to see him come out and control his box a little better? Maybe, but, you know, neither one of those balls, if I'm in goal, you know, both balls were well served and pretty well whipped in with some pace. So, you know, I'm not sure you can really put him at fault. But so, you know, overall, really, after, you know, he kind of kept us in it after the first kind of the initial wave of attack there at the beginning of the game. But, you know, after that, he really didn't have a whole lot to do, you know, there until the end. So, you know, with not being able to really put him in, you know, in the spotlight for blame for the goals, I think that, you know, overall, you got to say that, you know, he had, you know, a pretty good match, and he's definitely not the reason that we lost the lead, I'll tell you that.
Okay, very good. All right, let's move on. Let's now talk about the fullbacks. Again, Jazz Richards came back in at left back, and we had James Husband again at I got them mixed up. Sorry, Jazz Richards at right back and James Husband at left back. How did they fare?
Well, I thought that they, you know, they both were effective in the attack, and they both, you know, really got stuck in and things like that. I think Jazz Richards really showed some grit and showed some toughness in some of his tackles, especially the, you know, sticking his head in and getting his head headed and having to come out and, you know, stuff like that, you know, towards the end of the match. But, you know, I think, towards the end of the match, I think that knock affected Jazz Richards. I think it really did. You know, I saw a lot of people, you know, crediting him for his toughness and things like that. But honestly, I think that knock, even though, yeah, he was tough to stick his head in there, I think that knock made him, made him maybe not as aggressive on you know, some possibilities to break down attacks and things like that. And then, you know, on the goal, on the second goal, I mean, somebody's got to be at fault. And, you know, he's either not communicating to his center backs that a player is coming, or he's not taking – he's not taking responsibility and stepping to that player. Yeah, there's a player behind him, and he's got to be worried about that, but you've got to always take care of the most dangerous players, and at worst, you've got to communicate, to your center backs that somebody's, you know, on their inside shoulder. So, I think he was affected by that challenge. And, but James Husband, I thought, you know, played decently well. I thought, you know, he was able to get forward a decent amount. He had he was important on some of the attacks, and I thought they played okay. I think they kind of let themselves down towards the end, but I don't think it was all their fault. I think it was us really, again, dropping back into our shell. And I mean, you look at James Husband's, and he basically had a left back in front of him,
right?
You know, when Garbutt came in, and so that's really hard to deal with. Hey, I'm a left back that likes to get forward, but then there's a left back playing left midfield that is kind of stuck in two minds, and so it really confuses everything, and I think that really had an effect towards the end of the game.
Okay, very good. And Matt, just to go back to that second goal by Charlton Athletic, again, I've watched this many times, and when I watched it live, I could see it happening in front of my eyes, which was very frustrating. You could see the buildup. You could see Cousins wide open, and again, a player got to him at the last minute. What was going through your mind watching that?
Oh, you can just see the dominoes fall. I mean, you can just see, the simple passes that they're able to make in the build-up, the pass wide. He has plenty of time to get it out from under his feet and serve a good ball. He whips a great ball in, to be fair. I mean, it's a fantastic ball. And it's just kind of – honestly, unfortunately, it was a very easy goal at the end of the day for them. It really wasn't that difficult. It was an easy cross. It was a relatively free header, even though somebody got there right towards the right, at the last second and, made it a little bit more difficult. But for somebody at that level, honestly, that's a pretty simple goal. And that's really, really upsetting that he headed the ball in the middle of the goal. He's in the middle of the goal, free runner. And, we're just not being physical enough with those kind of players to at least put them off their runs or whatever. I mean, they're just, people just make free runs. Inside of 12 yards from our goal, and that's just really, really upsetting. And then not to have pressure on the outside to at least make the cross more difficult was pretty upsetting as well. But, yeah, no, I mean, I agree. You can see the buildup, and you can, as you watch it, you can literally see the dominoes fall, and you just know what's coming.
Yeah, it was just very difficult to watch, and I'm glad that you broke down not just the play of Cousins, the play of covering him, but also the cross itself because, again, that's, I think, been an issue with Fulham, not closing down. The cross is enough and giving them too much space and making it too easy for them. Like you said, in the end, it was an easy goal. And that's the real disappointing part of how this game ended. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's now talk about the play of Tim Ream and Richard Stearman. I'm curious your thoughts on both of them and how this partnership is starting to come together.
I mean, I thought they played pretty well. They were under some pressure at the beginning, and they were dropping off a little bit and really just trying to when you're on the road, you're always going to have to defend, or typically you're going to have to defend a pretty big storm and a pretty big push, the first 10 or 15 minutes because they want to get off to a good start. And, a lot of teams are not like us where sometimes when we play at home, we like to sit back the first 15 minutes. But they came at us pretty hard, and I thought that they dealt with it pretty well. I think they're really starting to work together a little bit better. Again on the last goal, is Ashley Richards communicating? Is Stearman listening to that communication? Does he need to be a little bit more aware? I mean, I think that as much as you like to try to pin every goal on one person, I don't think you really can. I think you've got to, I think there are some, like we always say on this show, everything is very connected. And so it's not just, you could probably point to about five or six different situations that lead to a goal. So, I think they're starting to get there. I think that, both of them are passing the ball very well. They're up over 75%, both of them for the game. So, when your center backs can keep the ball and more importantly not give the ball away in dangerous situations, which they're going to from game to game, but hopefully what they're able to do is basically just link up with O'Hara and kind of go from there. But you can kind of see it growing, but again, it's a little bit disappointing that we have two big center backs and we can't really control our box towards the end of the match when it really matters.
Okay, very good. All right, now let's move to the midfield. I'm really curious your thoughts on the midfield here. We've got Ben Pringle, Jamie O'Hara, Ryan Tunnicliffe, Lasse Vigen Christensen, and Luke Garbutt came in the 60th minute for Ben Pringle. Talk about their play.
I thought Ben Pringle was fantastic. I think the fact that he had one of his better games for us and the fact that he was subbed off, not only him leaving the game, but the way that Garbutt came into the game in that situation really kind of turned that tide and really started to kind of tell Charlton how we were going to play the last little bit. And so, I thought that he was playing a very good game. He was very effective, being very dangerous and very involved in the attacks and things like that. But when you come off with 30 minutes to go, and when you go to defend a 2-0 lead for 30 minutes, I mean, I just don't really understand the thinking, but he was very good on he was good on the dribble. He got some. Finally, he's getting some more crosses in more consistently, which is really what we need from him, and really what I think is one of the reasons we brought him in. And I don't know, you know, maybe he's carrying a knock or something like that, but or maybe just, you know, Kit really just wanted to get Garbutt, in his first game back and was kind of being greedy. I don't know, but I thought Pringle was okay. On the other side, LVC does what he does, and I thought he really showed some glimpses, especially when we were really cooking going forward. Really showed some explosiveness that I really haven't seen from him this year. And so I was really happy to see kind of how he played. Now, I thought he was the more effective of the two wingers, but I definitely thought Pringle, you know, held up to his end of the bargain, unlike some of the past games. But LVC was probably the better of the two. I thought that he played very, very well. The one thing that always concerns you with LVC playing wide is he going to make us narrow because of how he's pretty used to playing on the inside. So, he had a shot and he had a very high pass completion rate and was very good on the dribble. He was 80% successful on his dribbles, which is always very, very important for a winger. And so I really liked the way that he played. Jamie O'Hara was fantastic. I still don't understand why, unless we're just missing something, why he can't finish a match. He looked pretty upset when he came off. It didn't look like he was too pleased with being subbed. So, I don't think it was necessarily his idea to want to come off, but I thought he was fantastic and he controlled the pace of the game. And he's very quickly turning into our key player. Tunnicliffe, I have a bit of a problem with. He is clearly at fault for the first goal. It's his player. That player gets inside of him, free header. I mean, the guy just came on. You've got to be aware of that. And he just didn't get the job done. And then on the corner right after that, his player left him again and beat him again. And he had to grab his shirt. Luckily, the cross didn't find him. And so I was very, very upset with his lack of individual responsibility on those corners. But, throughout as the game as a whole and playing, playing on the field and in the attacks and stuff like that, he did okay. But, he made major mistakes at really, really bad times. I mean, you look at it, you go, okay, well, he had a goal and an assist. How could he have a bad game? Well, he also gave him the spark by not marking up on the corner for the first goal. So, you've got to do both sides. You can't just play one side of the ball, and that's just not going to get you wins in this league.
Listen, I totally agree with you. And it's funny because Kit talked after the match about decision-making. And, I could talk about his decision-making, but also, obviously, the player's decision-making. And this is a situation. It's, again, I hate to go back to this term that I use about the New England Patriots, but it's situational football. And you could talk about it right here, Matt. And Ryan Tunnicliffe needs to do better here and did not do good enough, especially on the first goal, like you mentioned. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the play of the strikers. I'm curious your thoughts about Ross McCormack, Moussa Dembele, and also Colley Woodrow, who came on later on the match for Moussa.
Well, I thought that Ross was going pretty well and was being involved and obviously scored the goal. It was a great goal. I knew as soon as he struck it, I knew it was in the far corner, and it was a very well worked goal for him, and great to see him get a goal in the run of play, because he scores a lot of penalties and stuff like that, and that's what some of his goals have come from. So it's always good to see him get a goal in the run of play to give him some confidence. I thought that he was very integral to a lot of our attacks, and was being dangerous and was taking players on, and so I was pretty happy. Now towards the end of the match, he had to drop in and try to help us dig balls out and things like that. But if you look at his heat map, and I'm not sure if everybody's kind of seen this, but a heat map is basically kind of where he spends most of his time on the field. It's kind of an infrared map, and his heat map was towards the box, and it was something that you and I talked about in the last show that, against Wolves, I think he had three touches inside the box, or three actions inside the box the whole game, In this game, he had, upwards of 10 actions start inside the box. So, that just shows that he's being more aggressive and we were being more aggressive, and he was a big part of that. As for Musa, I thought that he was playing well. I was interested to see him come off. I thought he was very, very, very influential in the game and was having a good time against the center backs for Charlton, and something that we knew was going to come up was going to be their maybe lack of ability to play physically, and that's something that Musa can kind of thrive off of. And I'm not sure why he can't finish a match just like Jamie O'Hare. I mean, the kid is 19. I don't think he's carrying a knock or anything like that, but his aerial presence and his ability and his pace to just be able to pressure balls to the center backs and to chase balls down in the last 20 minutes and to be, to just be a handful and not just let them build out of the back was something I think we missed. Colley came on and he had a chance and did okay, but I don't know why he was used necessarily. He was targeted a couple times. He did, like I said, he did have a chance and a chance to put away the game, really. Wasn't able to, and we paid for it. But I just it's a tough situation to come into with 22 minutes to go, and kind of have to adapt and have the game switch so quickly when you come in is kind of something you can't shy away from, really. After he came in is when the game kind of changed, and so it is something you can't really ignore.
No, very good there, Matt. And listen, it's interesting. We're going to be talking about all three substitutions in coaching situations coming up. But just going on to Colley, he did have a couple of opportunities, but I'm still puzzled why. You just named two players. Why those two players came off? And again, we could talk about Ben Pringle as well, but especially Jamie O'Hara. Why does he come off? He was our best player. He was our best player. Why is he coming off? And then, like you said, why is Moussa Dembélé coming off against a team that he's really doing a nice job against? Like you said, a team that's not giving him as hard a time as Wolves did. Why can't he play 90 minutes? It's a great question. We're going to talk about that coming up. But those are the situations that keep me thinking what exactly is going on decision making. We could talk about decision making of some of the players, which we definitely should, but we can also talk about the decision-making of the manager, because that's what has me a little bit puzzled after this match. And, at the very end of the show, I'm just going to ask you, what's the common thread of giving up these late goals? Because that's what's really driving me crazy. Why are we giving up so many late goals? It's funny, Matt, I was trying to think of a match that reminded me this a little bit of, and honestly, it was a match I went to. I went to the Reading match a few years ago, 3 years ago, at the Majeski Stadium, and it went back and forth. It was a little bit different. But again, we gave up all these late goals. And that was under Martin Yole, and that was a theme under Martin Yole. And honestly, this theme has now continued under Kit Simons. And I'm going to ask you later why you think that is the case. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's now go into coaching situations, and let's talk about the substitutions, because that's what I wrote down as all of our coaching situations we're going to go through, and let's go through them individually. After Fulham scored their second goal, Fulham made a substitution, bringing on Luke Garbutt and taking off Ben Pringle. Now, again, this is right after the goal. Based on our conversation, you don't agree with this, Matt?
No, not at all. I think it's a negative substitution. Bringing on a left back to play left midfield. I thought what was going to happen is I actually thought Garbutt was going to go to left back and Husband was going to go to left midfield.
That would have made
more sense to me. Because Husband likes to get forward and Garbutt's just coming back into the fold. I mean, this is really his first game of the season. And we're going to throw him into a position that he's not really comfortable at. That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think that has an impact on the other players. I think that they probably look at that and they're questioning it themselves during the game. And if they're not focusing completely on their job in the game, then things can start to falter. You know, and like I said before, when we were going over the fullbacks positioning, you know, fullbacks how they played, you know, I think that that really confused Husbands, because could he, was he allowed to get forward anymore, or were they just bunkering in on that side? I think there was really a disconnect between kind of the tactics and not knowing really what we wanted to do. And I thought it was a very negative substitution, and I think it definitely showed itself to the mentality of the team, and it was very, you know, and then I mean, just the fact of that, but then also Ben Pringle was playing pretty well. I mean, why not, you know, leave him in at least for a little bit longer, and to say, hey, run your guts out, and let's really press, and let's try to get a third, and then we can get you a rest, because I don't see. Unless these players are carrying injuries, why rest them? We have an international break. We have 2 weeks until we play Middlesbrough. What are we resting for? You know, it's not like we're at the end of the season and players have many miles on their legs and things like that, or we have a midweek game or whatever. I mean, these players have virtually 13 days off before their next match. I mean, why are we feeling the need to rest players, unless it's just to get Garbutt some minutes, which in that case, put him at left back and slide Husbands into left midfield.
Exactly. And that's the one that surprised me. I figured that a Husband would move to left midfield and they would just have Luke Garbutt at left back. That's what I figured was going to happen, but that was not the case. And you mentioned this while we were talking during the show, that you think that this sent a message to Charlton.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that they look at that and they, you know, they obviously scout all the players and scout all their tendencies and things like that, and they know that Garbutt is traditionally a left back, and I'm sure that when he came on at left midfield, I'm sure their players were talking to their right-sided players saying, hey, get after this guy. He hasn't played this year. He's just getting minutes starting in. Get after this guy and see what he's all about. You know, you're not going to have to worry about him coming forward too much. Because he is naturally a defender, and so let's get after him on that side. And what do you know? The second goal, where was it? Down the right side. down their right side, our left side. And I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence.
Okay, very good there, Matt. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the second substitution, which was Moussa Dembele coming off and Kalei Woodrow coming on. Did you approve of this substitution based on our conversation? You didn't. Again, Moussa Dembele playing well. Kalei Woodrow, I thought, played decent, like you mentioned, but talk about this substitution in more detail.
Well, of the three substitutions, this is the one that I think that is probably the least questionable, because it's been pretty consistent. I mean, Kit has consistently made this substitution about this time and about this point in the match. So I think of the three substitutions, I think this is probably the one you question the least. But at the same time, you know, things were going well, and Moussa was a handful for their center backs, and I think it was a good matchup on our side. So I don't think there's necessarily a reason to make a substitution there. But you know, I think at the end of the day, like you said, Kalei came on, played decently well, had a couple of chances. So I think of the three substitutions, this is the one I can probably swallow and just say, hey, it's been pretty consistent. This is kind of what he does towards the end of matches, and Kalei did create a couple of chances. So, you know, I would think that the other two were definitely more talking points.
Listen, I completely agree with you, but our co-host David Holly brought up a good point. This is a typical move of Kit. This is what he does. He went by the book. He made the substitution like he would in pretty much the last several matches, taking off Moussa Dembele and keeping on Kalei Woodrow. Again, this is too predictable for me, Matt. Instead of sticking with a player that's playing well, he takes off a player. He kind of goes with his tendencies. His tendency has been to take off Dembele and put on Woodrow.
No, it's very true. I mean, you make a good point. And how has his tendency been working out? Not really that well. So you know, maybe a change in tendency is needed. So you know, I mean, it definitely, you know, it's a good point to think that you know, even though it is kind of consistent in what he's doing, you know, maybe that's the problem, and maybe he needed to kind of just go with who was playing well that day, and just let them kind of finish the match, and just kind of let them run it out.
Now listen, I. I hear you, my friend. All right, let's now talk about the third and final substitution. This came very late. Jamie O'Hara comes off, and Sakari Mattila comes on. Now, again, Sakari Mattila is a defensive midfielder, but I still don't understand to this moment why he took off Jamie O'Hara. I don't get it, Matt. What was the advantage of bringing on Mattila compared to having O'Hara, who's controlling the play, and your best player? Why are you doing this at this point? This is the one that really has me scratching my head.
No, I'm absolutely with you. This one I just don't get, because not only was O'Hara our best player, he was the best player on the field, for both teams, and it really wasn't close. I mean, he was the class of the game, and he controlled the tempo of the game. He controlled our possession and our attacks and things like that, and so it's really befuddling kind of where this comes from. And you know, again, another player who hasn't played for us very much, if at all. I'm not sure he's played at all for us this season. Maybe bit parts here and there.
Right.
But I'm going back through our games, and I'm seeing he played for us in the League Cup, and really that's about it for us this season. He played against Wolves as well. But I just don't understand taking off your best player, the best player in the match, the most influential player in the match, and leaving him out for the last 10 minutes, which is really when the game was decided. And, whether he's our captain or he's not, I really think that O'Hara is our leader. I think that he's our engine. And when you take that out, I think that, people are kind of looking around for another one, and I just don't think that there's a set one. Without Scott Parker being in there or somebody like that, I just don't think that that Ross is that kind of leader. But I think that O'Hara is the kind of player that when he went off, I think our players knew it. I mean, I think our players knew that was the player that was going to win us the game, or at least hold on to the 3 points for us and just will us to the end. And when he went off, you could just kind of see us be a little bit deflated, and they ran at us even more. And, we saw the final result.
Listen, that's a great point, talking about leadership. And nothing against Ross McCormack. Ross McCormack is your captain, okay? He's the captain. But really, the leadership comes from central midfield, comes from Jamie O'Hara. And you feel the confidence. I'm sure the players feel the confidence. As a fan, I feel the confidence when he's on the pitch. You take him off in a situation where, again, it's the end of the match. You take him off. As another player, I'm just thinking about it as – say I'm another player on the pitch. I got to be asking myself, do I feel as confident as I did before? Do I feel confident now compared to when he was on the pitch? And again, I truly believe in leadership on the pitch at all times. I think this really hurt Fulham more than Kit probably thought at the time. He probably thought he was going with a defensive midfielder would be okay. But you brought up a good point. You took off a leader. And who were the other players looking at? Everyone was probably looking at themselves, which is fine. But in such a crucial situation, you should have your best player on the pitch, and you should have your leader on the pitch, and that's Jamie O'Hara, Matt.
Yeah, and it's when you take off the most influential player in the game is clearly going to change. And the confidence in the other players. That they not necessarily that they don't have in the players who came in and the other players that are in, but it's the supreme confidence that they have in Jamie O'Hara, I think, right now, that he is at the top of his game, and everybody knows that, and I think that there is a supreme confidence in that player. Not that they don't have confidence in their other teammates, but I think he's kind of almost on a pedestal right now in terms of how our team views him, in terms of his importance to what we do. I think that basically when he went off, you could almost see us kind of tighten up and go, okay, we got to do this without Jamie. We're going to have to basically just bunker in it and see what happens. We're not going to have that player who's going to be able to control the game and settle us down if we can win possession of the ball and kind of win the game for us and run out the clock.
Yeah, exactly. And, listen, we made this comparison, and the comparison, I think it's fair to make this comparison to Danny Murphy at this point, Matt. I think you can make that comparison. I know when Yoel started taking off Danny Murphy late in matches near the end of his tenure at Fulham Football Club, I didn't feel comfortable with it because I felt that, that we lost something. Every time he left because of the leadership that he gave, I know he didn't have the legs that he once had, but he's good for that leadership. And I think here's a similar situation. When you have a leader on the pitch, like we've been talking about, you take him off, and you know, you're going to be looking around. You know, you're going to be thinking to yourself, oh, what do we do now? You know, I'm not saying that not everyone has confidence in themselves. They do. But it's just that extra thing that you really – you can't measure – you can't measure that. You can't measure leadership like that. You can't measure it. Unfortunately, you could see it, you could see its effect when you don't have it on the pitch. And I think it's fair for us to talk about this because especially in a tight situation at the very end of the match, I think you needed your leader, and I'm going to call him what he is. He is the leader, Jimmy O'Hara, on the pitch. So, again, this is the one that really drives me nuts. All right, Matt, we have a couple minutes. So again, what I'd like to do is really just talk to you about situations, again, coaching situations. Very, very interesting article. I don't know if you had a chance to read it on hamian.com by Chris Gilbertson. And I thought I would ask you a little bit about it. It's funny. We were talking about this at one point. I think someone wrote about this, wrote into you about this, talking about having positional coaches. And Chris actually wrote about that, compared it to the NFL, how NFL has coordinators and has positional coaches. And he was talking about this in this article. Again, I want to ask your thoughts about that. You know, when you're on the pitch, should there be some, you know, again, it's not, at this point, it's unconventional to have a coach work just with the strikers, work with the midfielders, work with the back four, and then, of course, work with a goalkeeper. You do have a goalkeeper coach. But is this something that maybe teams should be looking into at some point?
Well, I think to a certain extent, teams do have those position-specific coaches. Now, those coaches probably have other roles within the club. I seriously doubt that they have a coach that their one role inside the club is to coach the strikers. They may work with the first team with the strikers, but they may also be like the under 16 manager or something like that. So I think to a certain extent there are those specified coaches. But where the problem in that lies is you. Yes, you need to do some specific work and some of what we call functional training, which is position-specific training, which I do with my team usually about once or twice a month during the course of the season. Strikers need to work on finishing, and midfielders need to work on shape and balance and switching the point of attack and that kind of thing. And defenders need to work on communication and field coverage and transitioning from defense to attack and things like that. So there are specific things each position needs to work on. But as you and I have talked about before, so many things in the sport involve the other positions. So what the backs do has a lot to do with what the midfield does, which has a lot to do with what the forwards do. So much of what they do is interlinked that
right.
I think that you can have some certain areas that each position does need to work on and need to focus on. I think that so much of the game is interlinked and intertwined from position to position that it's hard to just work with the forwards for an hour and a half on the game as a whole, because you've got to say, well, when the midfield does this, then we react to that. So it's kind of when you could really see a lot more of that kind of training in terms of tactical training with each specific position would be, if they're playing 11-a-side, on the training pitch and they're doing that stuff. And a coach is basically almost quarterbacking them as they're going through it, as they're playing kind of thing, kind of shouting out to them. Or stopping play and showing them things at very certain times. But in terms of one-on-one coaching and long sessions with tactical training with position specific, it's actually pretty difficult if you're not a goalkeeper. But it is important, and it is it's probably the hardest part of the game is to get your point across to each individual specific position, each level of the field, and yet have them merge seamlessly into an 11 that really can flow.
Okay, very good. And again, I remember that we'd already talked about this, but But I after reading Chris's article, I thought I would just bring it up again because it's not conventional. Like we're talking about, and you bring up the reasons why it's not conventional. That's why I thought we could at least talk about this because again, it comes down to trying to figure out ways to fix the problems that Fulham are having, Matt. And that's what I want to ask you about. You know, again, how does Kit fix these issues? You know, again, why are we giving up so many of these late goals, especially on headers? I want to pick your brain again. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but again, the Cardiff match, the Rotherham match, this last match, it keeps happening. We're giving up these late goals. And the last time I remember it being this bad was under Yule, so I'm trying to understand, why do you think it keeps happening and how can we fix it?
Well, I think at the end of the day, unfortunately, there may be only one ultimate way to fix it, and it's something that I don't really like to talk about because being a head coach myself, I'd never want anybody to call for my job or anything like that. But clearly, there's not a great response because it happens so often that you have to know, and we've heard Kit be very frustrated in post game interviews, and so you know that he went and got on them and was up front with them and really tried to get in their face, not physically get in their face, but get in their face verbally and really try to fix things, and really where you see if it's working or not is what's the response to that. What's the lasting response to that? Do they actually fix it, or is it something that just kind of lingers and the response isn't as positive and things just kind of don't change? With Yule, I think it was the same thing, and we saw that the response just wasn't there to what the manager said. And unfortunately, if the players aren't responding, there's really ultimately only one thing the club can do, and that's to go find somebody that the players will respond to. And unfortunately, I think that the arrows are starting to point in that direction if they haven't started already. I just don't see the response from the players. And you know, it's happened so often, you know that he's gotten on to them about it. You know that he's probably in no uncertain terms really gotten into him about it. And unfortunately, you just don't see a lasting response. And I think that kind of tells us what we need to know.
Okay, very good. And listen, I know it's difficult to talk about. You know, I certainly don't want to talk about changing a manager. It's been a year, Matt. It has. It's been a year. You know, again, Kit's had a good amount of time. And, he's a good man. He's a Fulham man. You don't want to have these discussions. But, again, if we want Fulham to be where we want them to be, you know, we have to call it like we see it. And there's something wrong here. And that's why I wanted to ask you, you know, what can be done. And you're mentioning what you think needs to be done. And, listen, I'm not going to lie, and I'm going to be honest. I'm feeling the same way as you. And that's unfortunate because I don't want to be feeling this way. But I keep asking myself, you know, why can they not fix the problems? You have to look at the top. You do. Why are they not responding? You have to look at who's in charge. And that's unfortunate to be having this discussion. But this is an interesting time, Matt. And it's funny because I've been talking to my friends. You know this, that I have many friends that actually follow Derby County. And what's interesting is that two years ago, after nine matches, Derby County changed their manager. And I thought at the time, what are they doing? They sack Nigel Clough and they bring in Steve McLaren. After nine matches, after the 10th match, they drew the 10th match. Matt, Derby County 2 years ago were on 12 points. Fulham are currently on 12 points. So it gets you to think, if there's a time to do it, Matt, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, and it's, in terms of, now, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think there's been any grumblings about it happening, but, you know, it's similar to the Liverpool situation with Brendan Rodgers. You know, an international break would actually be a perfect time because, you know, you could get somebody in and they would have a week and a half to 2 weeks to actually get a hold of the team. You know, and unfortunately, like you were saying, it is, it is the guy at the top, you know, the buck stops here kind of thing. But, you know, because, you know, we deal with that in American sports a lot is, you know, the kind of the saying is you can't fire all the players. So even if the players are the problem, you can't fire all the players because that's just not how it works. So unfortunately, the person who usually has to fall on the sword is the person at the top. And, you know, that's why I was so very, very uncomfortable, really, even with Kit Simons getting the job in the first place. Because, you know, it's kind of doing business with family kind of thing. He's family, he's a Fulham guy, but this is why you don't do business with family, because if it goes badly, you risk losing a member of your family. And he's been fantastic for Fulham Football Club. I mean, think about what he did to our academy. And the worst thing that I fear is that this is not going to end well, and he's actually going to leave Fulham. And, you know, that's honestly, that's probably, to me, the worst thing that could happen, because he's a very important part of what we do, you know, as a club. But, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to, you know, unfortunately, something's kind of has to bend, and something, you know, eventually it's going to break. And so, you know, that's just kind of the way the world works, and that's the way football is these days.
Yeah, you know, and listen, I feel uncomfortable even talking to you about this. I do, because of Kit Simons, and Kit is actually a very positive guy. He's a glass half full guy like me. That's why I'm conflicted talking about this, honestly. But it's difficult for me not to look straight ahead and look at the evidence and think what's wrong here. And unfortunately, I'm looking at the manager, and again, I think that's the reality. The reality is there are problems, and it might take a managerial change to ultimately fix it. The question will be, will they do it? I don't know if Fulham Football Club will do it, but if you're asking me right now, after 10 matches, I think that they need to do it, Matt. That's just my opinion. Would you, you know, do you agree with that, or do you disagree with that?
Unfortunately, I do. I mean, I completely agree with it. And, you know, like I said, for all the reasons is why I hate it, what I said before. But, you know, and I think that, unfortunately, what has hindered the club from doing it are the reasons that I talked about. And I think that's what's kind of been holding us back. And I think that, you know, it has the possibility of setting us back another couple of years from being able to compete for the playoffs or get promoted or whatever. And, you know, that's the unfortunate part is that's, you know, going back to it, that's why it's hard to hire somebody that's been a part of your club the whole time, because it's going to be very hard to fire him. And, you know, unfortunately, maybe that's what I think that's probably what's holding it up more than anything, because if this is Martin Yol, if this is somebody from the outside that's not really a Fulham man, I think it's very easy to say, hey, thanks for coming. Here's your P45. Next one up. You know, but I think this one's a little bit more difficult of a decision for the chairman to make, and you know, just because of his long relationship with Kit, and unfortunately, that's kind of handcuffing the club right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, this is a tough situation. It's a tough discussion. It's one that I don't feel comfortable talking, but I you know, again, if I'm being true to myself, Matt, I have to be honest here how I feel. And, you know, and you have to be honest how you feel. So I'm glad that we could talk about it. It's, you know, again, it just came out during the conversation. I didn't plan on talking about this. It just came out while we were just discussing the match and talking about problems, and it just came out. So again, if someone has a problem with us talking about the situation with Kit, that's understandable. But just understand where we're coming from. We want to see Fulham progress. We want to see Fulham back in the Premier League. And sometimes a manager can hold you back from that. I hate to put it that way, but I think we have the talent. What is bothering me is that I don't think we have the right man to get the most out of the talent, to put the talent in the best possible positions to succeed. And he's had a year now, and I'm sorry, that's just how I feel. All right, Matt, I'm sorry, you know, going off on a little rant here, a little Kit rant, didn't plan on it, but listen, thank you so much for doing this with me. I love doing this with you. We're 9 episodes in, my friend, and the response has been fantastic. People love the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, so it's pure pleasure doing this with you.
Oh, well, I really enjoy it, Russ, and I'm glad we're kind of, getting a decent following, and hopefully we're, you know, I'm bringing something different to the table, and you know, just give somebody a different look at and more access to kind of maybe the inner workings of how things possibly are done at the club. And so it's always good as a fan to have different avenues to kind of have access to the club, or have get your Fulham fix, if you will. And so hopefully this just kind of adds to that.
Well, I got to be honest with you, it helps me, because again, you know, it's funny. I do the post-match show, but I always look forward to doing the show with you. And I got to be honest with you, this is the ninth one. I've never looked forward to doing one more than doing this one, because of the frustration I had and the frustration I had going into it. So again, it allows me to vent a little bit. Allows you to get those thoughts across as well, you know, and hear what you have to feel. And I always feel better after doing a show with you. So thank you, my friend. And please, before we go, do say hello to Heather for me. And it's been a while.
Oh, absolutely,
since I talked
to you. She's looking forward to being back on at some point with her busy schedule. And so she's doing well, busy at work and things like that. And you know, definitely, you know, I was in Columbia, and I know a lot of people know about the floods that were in Columbia, South Carolina this weekend, and we were there.
Yep.
Luckily, but everything is okay with us, and we weren't really impacted by them, but we had friends and family that were, so, you know, thoughts and prayers are definitely welcome, but everything's going to be, you know, Columbia's strong, so we'll definitely get past it.
Yes, and I'm glad that you mentioned that. Thoughts and prayers with everyone in Columbia, South Carolina, in that area, and just hope everyone's okay. It's a tough situation. All right, Matt, let's wrap up this show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cars Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. You can also listen to Cars Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's going to do it for the ninth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cars Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ.
Take care.